years later, his father, who is mightily displeased about this, says, well, this vow of yours, I hope it wasn't just an illusion. Right? After all, his father reminds him, you are supposed to obey your father and mother and honor your father and mother. That's what the command says. The command of God, Luther is thinking, is certain. Right? This prayer to St. Anne, that's not so certain. That's what his father reminded of him of. His father was displeased. Right? He wanted a son who would go to law school and make some money and get married and give him grandchildren. Luther entered the monastery against his father's wishes. He entered the monastery, he later thought, willfully and in disobedience to God who commanded him to honor his father and mother. So it turns out, becoming a monk didn't really solve his problem. Didn't solve this problem of terror and uncertainty in the face of the judgment of God. It was against his father's will. Let me say a little bit about his father. His father is the son of a peasant. He's a social climber. He's working really, really hard. He can't inherit the family's property, so he goes off because he's not the younger son, who is the inheriting son in this setup. So he leaves the farm and he gets involved in mining, which is a booming operation at this period in German history. He becomes eventually a mine operator and owner. He makes a decent living by working very, very hard, right? And he wants his son to go further than he does. He sent his son to the university. Right? He didn't get a university education. Hans Luther didn't. But Hans Luther's son, Martin, is going to get a university education and go to law school. Except then he becomes a monk. That spoils everything. So what's happening here, you see, is in Martin's standpoint, is he is becoming a monk against his father's will. And this spoils everything because the whole purpose of monasticism for Luther is to give up your will. That's why you have this vow of obedience that I mentioned in the second lecture. You give up your will to your superior so that everything you do is out of obedience and not out of your own self-will. And here Luther enters monasticism out of his own self-will. Luther, in fact, we discover in his later writings, really wants to get rid of self-will in a deep way. It turns out, Luther not only becomes a monk, he becomes a priest. He has this clash with his father about the Ten Commandments when he's saying his first Mass. Then he goes on to get a master's degree and a doctorate in theology. He becomes a professor of Bible at the University of Wittenberg. And we have some of his early lectures on Paul's letter to the Romans, where he focuses on getting rid of this self-will. Right? It's almost as if Luther just wants to get rid of his will altogether. He would, I think Luther would be happiest if he was just listening to music and floating on the joy of good music. We'll see that later. But instead, he's trying his hardest to work to earn grace. There's a real problem here. Let me say a little bit about these lectures on Romans, which we have the manuscripts of from 1516. He didn't publish them, but he wrote them out, and we have these things now, and they're published in German and in English. Now remember, let's think about the Augustinian paradigm that he's working within here. You want to be in a state of grace, right, rather than a state of mortal sin. A state of grace means a state of love for God, right, pure love of God for his own sake. There's the worry about willfulness, we'll see. And what happens is Luther wants to sort of go from a kind of progress where you start out loving God for your sake because you want something from God. Right, and then you move to loving God for God's sake, right? Loving God not for selfish reasons, not for what you can get from God, but for God's own sake. And eventually you love even yourself only for God's sake. Right? So you start out loving yourself for your own sake, then you move to loving God for your own sake, you move to loving God for God's sake, and then you eventually even love yourself only for the sake of God. This is a progression in the writing of a monastic writer, Bernard of Clairvaux, writing in the 12th century, much admired by Luther. So he's trying to progress to this state where his love for God becomes less and less selfish, less and less self-willed, less and less curved in on itself. This is a term that Luther uses in these lectures. He's worried about how even when we seek God for our sake, for what we can get out of it. This love is curved in on itself. It is, we would now say, selfish. That's a word that was invented after Luther, and Luther didn't have that word. So he talks about being curved in on yourself.